The cases that we're going to talk about here are, again, it doesn't distinguish the seller or the grower from a landlord, and many of the cases that are in play right now under the bankruptcy code relating to marijuana deal with the landlords. And for example, in Rent Right, you had a case where the case was dismissed when the debtor derived 25% of its revenues from tenants with marijuana businesses. And then you had a Arms Venture case where the plan payments were going to be from the cultivation and sale of the marijuana, and so that was also kicked out. Again, remember, there are lots of ancillary businesses that we're going to talk about, and that gets into the sort of situations that people should be thinking about when you talk in this area. And I'll give you some examples that we've been thinking about. For example, if a landlord has 50 properties and he leases one property to a dispensary, is that entity available? Can that entity be subject of a bankruptcy under the bankruptcy code? What about a seller of fertilizers to a marijuana grower? He derives profits from that marijuana business, and so is he or is that company then precluded from seeking relief under the bankruptcy code? What about parties who provide vape pens, bongs, one-hitters, all the products that are necessary for the actual intake of the product? Are they precluded from seeking relief under the bankruptcy code? Testing labs. I don't know how many of you are aware, but now in states that have legalized marijuana, much of the product has to go through a testing lab in order to determine various traits of that. And the question becomes, will those testing labs, if they run into a financial problem, will they be able to invoke Chapter 11 or any other provisions of the bankruptcy code? Another issue probably that comes into play is, what about employees who work at a dispensary, who make their living and get their wages from a dispensary? Are they able to file Chapter 7, 11, or 13? If you look at the present cases, I would say they probably are precluded, and that doesn't seem to be changing in any way anytime soon, except for maybe a few cases we could talk about. Lastly, can a guarantor in a marijuana business ever receive a discharge? These are difficult questions, and those have not been answered by the courts, but these are the kinds of things that people are going to have to start thinking about in this area, in my view. More extreme examples that can come about that are associated with the downstream cannabis products, roll-on pain reliever manufacturer, sparkling water infused with marijuana. What about cannabis lounges where you get to go and smoke the stuff? Or what about a restaurant serving cannabis-infused gourmet dinners paired with Napa Chardonnay? Is that restaurant capable of invoking Chapter 11 or going to bankruptcy? How about someone who supplies peppermint-flavored cannabis mouth spray to treat aches and pains? Or a global equity fund investing in the hemp industry, which Steve is going to talk to you a little bit about. And then finally, somebody like a cannabis superstore in Las Vegas. What are the contours of a business that's associated with the marijuana industry that can, in fact, invoke Chapter 11, invoke Chapter 7, or Chapter 13, and get the protections of the automatic stay? Those are the kinds of things that I think make it more difficult to implement once you get away from the core marijuana business. And these two slides are intended to demonstrate some of the issues that I think practitioners are going to have to deal with as we go along. What's the takeaway from the cases to date? One is they've arisen in the context of Chapter 13 and 7 cases, so it's a consumer type of litigation right now, and the consumer lawyers are involved in it more than the big Chapter 11 debtors. Pot growers are filing Chapter 7, 12, or 13, or trying to, and the major brouhaha, in my view, has been those cases in which an innocent tenant has leased property to a dispensary, and then the dispute arises between the landlord and the tenant, and either the tenant goes into bankruptcy or the landlord goes into bankruptcy, and the issues are whether or not those parties can in fact invoke relief under the bankruptcy code. And the last point here I want to make is, for those Chapter 11 practitioners who think this is not for you guys, I want you to know that I think you will be proven wrong by the magnitude of the industry and what's going on overall in the marketplace. The case that appealed to me when I was reading through the materials was a recent case called In Re Pat Olson. And it's a prototypical case in that it involved a landlord, it involved a lease, it involved a tenant who was a dispensary owner, and it went from the bankruptcy court all the way up to the Ninth Circuit, and the results, I'm going to give you the fact pattern in just a few seconds here. So Ms. Olson is a 92-year-old, legally blind lady, and she lives in an assisted living facility, okay? Notwithstanding that, she is a general partner of an entity called Olson Bijou Center, and it owns real property on Lake Tahoe Boulevard in South Lake Tahoe. It's called the Bijou Shopping Center. And if you Google this, there's actually this place there, and it's kind of a pretty-looking facility. So starting in 2013, a tenant, a guy named Cody Bass, comes to her and says, hey, I want to lease this property from you, and I'm going to operate a dispensary. There's a factual question whether or not he approached Ms. Olson or her son in connection with leasing the property, but nevertheless, he gets this lease, he operates a place called Tahoe Wellness Cooperative, and then subsequently, Mr. Bass, the tenant, and Ms. Olson's company, OBC, they enter into an agreement whereby she says, I'm going to sell you that entire facility for $4.2 million.